The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Boardroom Meeting. I'm your host, Russell Dinkins. It's been a long time since I've been on the radio, about upwards of 5 years now, but I am back. I'm very excited about it, and our show is so new that I don't even have my intro and outro ready yet, but you will definitely hear that in the upcoming weeks. To start the show off, I have a good friend of mine that is actually an aspiring author and also a motivational speaker. And she actually speaks about many of the topics that are important to women today. Her name is Monica Lowry, and I'd like to join her, like to introduce you to our audience and join her in the conversation. How are you, Monica?
I'm good, Russell. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well on this dreary day here in Philadelphia.
Yes, very dreary.
But like I briefed the audience, you're an aspiring author, and you actually have motivational speaking that you're actually doing. And we actually talked about some of the issues that our women are facing nowadays. And what are some of those issues that you have identified that are plaguing our women, and some of the solutions that they need to look towards to remedy their situation?
Alrighty, so a lot of different things that I talk to women about is, one, is being a single parent. I've talked to women regarding physical and mental and emotional abuse, and different other types of tragedies and disappointments that women have experienced.
I'm sure that the pandemic and all the close people sitting in the households and everything has not been a catalyst for some of those things that you have described.
Yes, definitely. You know, I've talked to different women that struggle, you know, trying to juggle, you know, work and trying to juggle, you know, their children. You know, of course, as we all know, it was a big change, you know, trying to work at home, you know, with the kids and, you know, different other situations that, you know, arose out of that. You know, a lot of single moms aren't home with their children during the daytime. So then, you know, they begin to experience, you know, some of those behaviors and different things that, you know, the teachers might experience in the children. So, you know, it's a lot of balance. There's a lot of things that, you know, parents may not have known about their children that they, you know, learned during the pandemic. And then there's things, you know, that we've learned about ourselves, you know, as far as like where we are mentally and physically, you know, during this challenging time.
Yeah, I know it's been challenging. I mean, going to meetings, sitting in your pajamas, watching Zoom and having a Zoom meeting, or trying to shut the doors and trying to black out the noise from children and other people that are in the household. And I can see where those problems that may have already existed could be exacerbated by the being sequestered, especially in confined spaces for such a long period of time. So I think that we all have experienced some of those stress-related situations over the past year and a half now. So your book is about your book. It says that how long have you been working on the book? Actually, let's go there first.
For several months now. There was time I had to put it to a side, you know, due to personal issues, but for several months now.
Well, I know that your speaking engagements in your book will use your own life as a backdrop to your message. How long did it take you to come to grips with what went on in your life? And we'll get into that in a few moments, where you can actually speak about this comfortably in a public forum.
Okay, so back in, I would say, the early 2000s, I began to attend a women's ministry, actually, through our friend. It was called Daughters of Zion, and it dealt with, like, all type of different women's issues, such as physical and sexual abuse. I began to, like, see different women give, like, testimonies of how they overcame, like, different tragedies, a loss, and different other types of devastations that they've experienced in their lives. I remember there was this one instance, we were at a conference in Indiana, and I looked across the room and there was this young lady sitting there, and you can really tell by her countenance that, you know, she had a rough time and she had been through a lot. I was allowed to come to the microphone and encourage her that, you know, whatever it was that she was going through at the time, that it was going to be all right. And just by her reaction, you can tell that she was, you know, relieved, and you can just tell like that some of her burdens began to lift off of her because, you know, what I was talking to her, and I shared some of my experiences. So from that moment on, you know, I was able to share, you know, with different women, whether, you know, personally or in front of a group, different things that I've experienced without shame. Because I think a lot of times when, like, we go through different types of relationship, and, you know, and especially abuse, you can, people, you know, are sometimes shameful of it. But, you know, I had to overcome that, you know, and realize that I was able to use my story to encourage other people. So,
So your journey starts pretty early in life. When was the first time that, age-wise, that you experienced some sort of abuse?
probably as far as back as I can actually remember, but it was in my teenage years when I actually experienced the bulk of it, you know, through my partner.
Okay, and how long did your abuse cycle last? For how many years until you was it? Later, when you were able to come out of that abuse cycle, what age were you then?
I was 17 going on 18. I was pregnant with my first son. I was in that relationship for about 9.5 years.
So 9.5 years. So the aftermath after the 9th year, going into the 10th year, how long did it take from that point, do you think, before you were able to be comfortable? With discussing what happened to you during that 9 year period.
I would say maybe about 5, 6 years.
Wow.
Five,
Okay.
6 years after the fact. Yeah.
Okay, and
I mean, it was, you know, my time frame is a little off only because there was a lot going on during that time, but I would say about 5 or 6 years if I had to estimate the exact time.
Is that when the healing cycle began, or were you actually healed at that point, at that 5 year point?
That's when it began because, you
Okay.
know, first of all, you have to acknowledge that, you know, okay, yeah, I've been through this. My, you know, you have to, let me back up. You have to acknowledge, one, the fact that, you know, that you're experiencing the hurt and the pain. Because although I had to keep moving, you know, because, okay, now I'm a single mom, I had to use what I went through as a stepping stone to my healing. So, like I said, it was a long and tedious process, but you know, I had to do it.
Okay. Are you still in the healing process, or have you, do you feel that you actually have healed from whatever you went through during that 9 year period?
I think, you know, generally we're all in a healing process, no matter, you might think that you may be healed of one thing, but you know, there might be a small remnant of something left behind.
Right.
You know, so, but for the most part, yes, definitely. I think if I wasn't, I wouldn't be able to be as candid with people as I am about different things that I've experienced in my life.
So you were talking about the young lady that you were able to witness her body language and so forth, that gave you some sort of inkling that she was dealing with something that you were familiar with. Do you think that is that like a common occurrence? Like, are you able to pick that up pretty readily when you're actually in like a small group or even with a large group of people? Could you tell that there's something that has occurred, possibly occurred in another woman's life?
Yes, with this particular young lady, I could tell by her countenance. It was like I saw myself in her, the way she was sitting. But yes, basically, I can. You can. Because if you say one word to someone, you know, you can just tell by their body language, you know, and not just any word, but, you know, certain things you say to people, you can just tell by their body language, you know, that they're experiencing something or have experienced something, you know, that maybe was either traumatic or something that, you know, that they need to talk about. So, to answer your question, yes.
So, in addition to your motivational speaking and the book that's coming out in a not too distant future, you know, in the meantime, if people want to actually reach out to you and talk with you one on one, are you open to that situation?
Yes. So early 2022, so we are in the process of revamping the website and everything, and that way people will be able to, you know, like set up appointments. if there's something that I wouldn't personally be able to assist them with, then I can definitely direct people to, you know, resources, you know, to get the help that they need.
Okay. All right. Are you going to be doing this endeavor by yourself, or do you have a team surrounding you?
Well, right now I'm by myself. However, with that being said, I do have a team that's waiting in the wing, you know, for other things, other projects that we're working on. But right now it's just by myself with the speaking part of it.
Okay. And I know that there are certain things in the book that you don't want us to get into because it's a book and it has to be sold. But
yes.
But one of the questions I will ask is, how would you, where would you say that a person, a friend, a parent, or someone just close to someone else, what type of behavior do you think that they should recognize as a possible issue that they may want to get in front of as it pertains to women?
I would say isolation generally. And I know that was one of the things that I did, you know, I stay isolated, from family and friends. I didn't have much of a social life, you know, during that time. Mm-hmm. What else can I think of? Yeah, I think that's one of the major things is isolation. And, you know, and then you can, like, and especially if it's, and I'm just going to speak on, like, in a couple relationship,
mm-hmm.
when you see one person being just, like, you know, there's one thing of, you know, two people being together, but when the other person just seems to be excessively controlling, and then the person that's being victimized generally makes a lot of excuses for that person's behavior,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, make excuses why they can't come to, like, family functions or anything like that. So, you know, I think those are the type of things that you have to look for.
Family functions. So why would they want to keep that person away from a family function?
Because generally an abuser doesn't want the family to know that they're being abusive. They generally want everybody to think they're like this happy-go-lucky person, or like, you know, they're the best thing since sliced bread. Mm-hmm. All the while, either they're being verbally or physically or emotionally abusive to that person, you know. So what they like to do is keep that facade, you know, and they tried to hide the abuse themselves.
Really? Okay.
So
what you're saying is very interesting. So the person who's being abused or victimized will actually go into a family setting and watch this other person transform into Mr. or Mrs. Great Person in front of their face, and then later on, it's a whole different animal.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And I've experienced that on numerous occasions. And, you know, and a lot of person couldn't believe that, you know, all mm-hmm. of that, you know, when it finally came out in the end, couldn't believe that all that was going on in the end,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, he was just such, you know, Joe Cool to everybody. Everybody
right.
liked him. They still do as of today, believe it or not. So.
But usually children are able to see through that, their parent or whoever is exhibiting that behavior, because they're around them all the time. Where in your situation, was your children able to see pretty readily see what was going on, or did it take some time for them to actually digest that?
Because my other two were so young, I don't think they realized, but my oldest son did. He did begin, you know, near the end, start to see some of the, you know, things firsthand, what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. And then I don't know whether your book speaks about this or not, but in terms of looking for other resources, do you think that actually going to family or friends for advice on what's going on is actually, would you recommend someone going out to maybe a trained professional to get someone to seek some help? Somebody that has an objective opinion.
Yeah, I would say it depends on the person. I would say, in, you know, from what I experienced, sometimes you can't necessarily go to family or people that's around you, especially if they don't see the behavior of the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're experiencing any type of hurt or trauma themselves, they can't look at it with an objective, you know, with with an adjectival I.
Okay.
They may give you advice out of their hurt and out of their pain. So I would say, if you can get to someone that's not related, you know, and that's just my personal opinion, what I experienced.
Mm-hmm.
I would do that. I would do that. Someone that you can trust, but you know, family, you know, isn't always the best to go to.
So when the book comes out, and what do you want your reader to experience as they're reading the book? What is their walk away?
One thing I would want them to walk away with is that you can, no matter how bad the journey is, that, you know, healing is possible. Healing is possible from anything that you may, you know, experience. I want them to walk away with knowing that what they experience, they can, you know, use those experiences to help other people. And that's what, you know, that's what I've always wanted to do, is help other women. And, you know, and men experience abuse too, help other women overcome their challenges from, you know, the trauma of abuse.
So we hear the word forgiveness a lot when it comes in these types of situations. Do you feel that it's important to forgive in these when someone has experienced trauma such as you have and so many other women have?
Yes, I think forgiveness is actually very important, because if you don't forgive, and, you know, you can think you're better, but, you know, I've heard the term be better, not bitter. I think if you don't forgive and don't let it go or release that person, yeah, I do think you can be bitter, and it'll affect you in other areas of your life.
Yeah, I think sometimes people confuse forgiveness with allowing a person to have another chance or another bite at the apple. And how do you feel about that? How do you feel that healing can occur on both sides, and people can reconcile after they have had some time apart to find themselves? Or do you think that certain level of actions really may have ruined a chance for redemption?
Well, I've seen it both ways, actually. I've seen a couple that I've seen it two ways, where the female was actually very abusive to a male. That didn't work, because you know there's dynamics there that, you know, there's just some dynamics there that is just not going to work with that, with the woman being abusive to a man.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've seen it where a male was actually abusive to his wife, and, you know, and they eventually reconciled, and, you know, and they're doing actually wonderful today, you know. So, but it took that process of healing and acknowledging that, you know, that, you know, there was issues on both sides, you know, that caused that abuse. Not to say any woman or any man deserves abuse, but, you know, when you add other things such as alcohol and infidelity and all the other stuff in there, you know, you're going to have those issues.
And also, sometimes the kids actually start to mirror that abuse pattern, and you can see the way they treat each other, or sometimes the spouses that they actually pick later on in life.
Yeah, I've witnessed that as well, especially if sons are around abusive men, then they turn out to be abusive. I've seen that in more than, and, you know, and that may not always be the case,
right?
But that does affect male children as well. And then on the female side, you know, if all she's used to seeing is abuse in her life, you know, she's going to think that's normal.
Right.
Because she doesn't know anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, society doesn't help as it glorifies the bad guy over the good guy, as far as, you know, it's depicted in films and in movies and TV movies, and also in some of the songs that play on the radio, as it really encourages the fact that the rebel or the guy that has the wayward past is the exciting gentleman. And the other one that's actually trying to go the straight and narrow is the boring guy. So I think some of these things are reinforced by pop culture. I mean, do you agree?
Yes, I definitely agree. Like you said, you see it all the time.
Right. And if you look at certain communities, sometimes, getting in trouble, whether or not in school or later on in terms of maybe the criminal justice system, is not considered a knock against choosing that person as a mate. It's sometimes it's actually, it's a shame to say, it is celebrated in some instances. So I think that that some of the things that we have described here may not be helpful for the present situation, but in future generations, we need to just educate across the board on what should an acceptable spouse look like to a person. What type of qualities should you actually be looking into, and also some investigative type of situations as well. I mean, you're bringing somebody into your life. Do you really know how they treat their own family members, how they're regarded in their community? Are they respected amongst their friends and their peers? Or, what's their work history like? All these different things go into what's the makeup of a person. And I think that sometimes we are really lax in our due diligence of before we actually bring somebody to share life space with us. And a lot of times we are not the better for that.
Right. And sometimes I think we ignore those red flags, and they don't even be red flags, little red flags. They'll be big, giant banners, and sometimes you choose to ignore them, so,
Yeah, and it's because of the fact that, a lot of it is because of giving strangers chances, and you got to let a stranger be a stranger until they prove otherwise. I mean, how do you... you don't meet someone on a Monday and by Friday you say that they're your friend, but a lot of people are dealing with microwave type of relationships, and before they know it, they're in this whirlwind that's spinning out of control. And a lot of these people that we just described actually thrive in those whirlwind relationships because they never have to prove anything about who they are. They could just let you get caught up in a whirlwind, and next thing you know, you're in a full-fledged relationship that may not be the healthiest for you.
Exactly. And I know someone that's going through that now, didn't get a chance to get to know the person, and the person is taking them through all hell right now.
Right. Okay.
So.
Yeah, that's not uncommon. I mean, that happens. And it happens because in a lot of instances is that people are really longing for one thing or another, or before they even meet the person. So they're looking for a void to be satisfied by somebody, and they're going to help that person satisfy their void by what they're actually going to make up in their own head about the situation before it actually materializes.
Exactly. But you got to make sure that person that you're longing for is not Freddy Krueger, because you're going to end up right in Freddy's nightmare.
Yeah. But I think that from what you're telling me today, that the book is going to be a success. I'm sure that for obvious reasons, we're not going to go through it in detail, because after all, you're an author and you're going to actually take this book to sale. But from the brief conversation that we had, it's obvious that you're going to take someone on your journey. I'm assuming from your childhood experiences up through adolescence and into adulthood is the journey that they'll be riding along with you, and they'll be able to see some of your struggles and some of your joys, some of your pain, and at the end of the day, they'll be able to latch on to your triumph.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, as far as, you don't have to tell us exactly where you grew up at, but just give me some background. You grew up in, was it a working class, middle class household? Just let me know a little bit about your growing up experience.
Well, I grew up outside of the Philadelphia area. There were many challenges. We grew up, well, we were technically middle class, but I swear we grew up poor. And that was just different things that that I noticed. Like I said, we had some there were some issues growing up, but I can't say like you know, we had, like I said, we had some, I had some, we had, there were some issues growing up. Not all was bad, you know, because like when I think about my childhood and like different things and the neighborhood, you know, there were actually a lot of good times.
So you came from a decent neighborhood.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Went to went to good schools.
Yes, I went to one of the best schools in the area.
Okay, and this is the painting that I'm trying to bring to life is that, you know, when you think about growing up and someone that has experienced some trauma in their life the way that you have, you would think that they grew up in a certain setting would jump into people's head readily. But as you said, you had a good foundation, a good home life, good home. You went to a decent schools, and despite all that, this particular situation of getting involved with the wrong person basically could happen to anyone. Is the point I'm trying to drive home?
Yes, and not really. And you stated something earlier. You know, I was younger then, so you know, and growing up around, you know, dysfunction, I didn't really know outside of what I saw on TV, and Lord knows you can't really base relationships off what you see on TV. I didn't know any better, you know, so what I was experiencing, I grew up seeing. So, you know, for me, it was the norm, you know.
Oh, okay. And how hard is that? That is tough. I mean, you actually grow up in a situation that you view as normal. And then you mirror that in your life, and then somehow it does not seem right for you. I mean, that has to be a tough struggle.
Yeah, it really did. And it, you know, and then when you start seeing what normal actually looks like, you know, you realize, well, dang, I don't spend all these years, you know, in a situation that I really didn't have to be in. But if you don't have anyone to guide you and say, you know, don't do that. Don't do that. That's not good for you. You don't know. You know.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to use, you'll use your platform, your motivational speaking, your book that's coming in the not too distant future to actually eradicate that for a lot of people. How can people get in touch with you? What's your Instagram?
Okay. So right now they can get in touch with me through my Instagram, which is Monte Q Speaks.
Okay. And do you have a Facebook or do you just want to go do Instagram?
They can just go through Instagram because that's where, they can just go through Instagram.
Okay, great. So I'm encouraging all that are listening that if you have a relative or someone that actually you care about that you want to direct to Monica for an entree into healing, she will try to talk with them. And also she will direct you to some sort of counseling if you need it. For the Instagram, Monica, spell that for the audience, please.
It's MONTAQUESPEAKS. Monte Q Speaks.
Monte Q Speaks. Okay.
My uncle used to call me Monte Q, so that's where that comes from.
Gotcha. So I know you're speaking to us remotely today, and then in the near future we'll have you back on, and you'll be in the studio with us, and we'll have the videos going on so that your fans could see you live, and you're going to reach out and talk to people, or people could call in and talk to you in real time, I shall say. So we look forward to you being part of the boardroom, Monica, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you so much for having me, Russell. You enjoy the rest of your day, sir.
You as well. Thank you for being a part of this edition of the Boardroom Meeting, and we will be back next Tuesday at 4:00, and we will, at that time, we will be having on Water Enhancement Technologies our good friend Rennie Beloff. Talk to you next week.